Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Pop Culture University. You already know, the university where you learn everything that is going on in the world of pop culture, and then see what life lessons you can learn for your own life that we extract from these celebrity situations and what is going on in their life. If it is your first time here, thank you so much for coming. You are so welcome. Take a seat in the classroom wherever you would like. If it is not your first time here, thank you so much for coming back. I love you. I stan you. I'm in your fandom. You already know I am the professor, Professor Patty. You may know me from TikTok as Patty Pop Culture, where I'm always exposing celebrities with a hint of sweetness and a hint of bitchiness. You guys, the New Year's Eve holiday is upon us. It always sinks up on you so fast because you just got done with the godforsaken anxiety-inducing overwhelmingness of the Christmas holiday week with all the family Christmas parties you have to go to, all the secret Santas, all the jolly gay meetings or whatever they say in that one Christmas song. It's just all too much. And then on New Year's, you have to get all hyped up again and then go out. And going out on a drinking holiday to me is just starting to not really seem worth it, because wherever you are, they always charge so much to go out to the bars. They oversell the tickets. So any bar, any club or fun place you would think to go to on New Year's Eve is just so overpacked that you're crammed like a can of sardines, not being able to move. Drinks are overpriced. People throwing up on you, getting COVID or the flu or RSVP or whatever the new disease is. I get it. New Year's Eve is a fun holiday for a lot of people. Girls want to wear their cute little it girl sparkly cocktail dress parties and live that fantasy, have a New Year's kiss for the night. But me, honestly, I would rather just stay home and get slightly drunk with my friends with a nice glass of wine or maybe some Bailey's hot chocolate and some whipped cream and just watch the New Year's specials. Watch Miley Cyrus and Dolly Parton be legendary cunts on their New Year's special. I honestly kind of get mad when I miss the ball drop and all these cute events going on, or Andy Cohen drunkenly screaming at the TV because I have to go out with my friends. That's just the type of person I am. I'd rather have a fun night in. So I'm kind of wanting to do that this New Year's Eve, but we'll see how it goes. Today we have a lot to talk about. One of the biggest topics taking over Twitter right now that really enrages a lot of people and everyone, no matter what social class you are from, seems to have a big opinion about nepotism babies. We need to talk about all about why I feel like they're kind of ruining the entertainment industry and why some nepotism babies I think are acceptable and others are not, and then rank them from best to worst, which ones I like, which ones I do not like. Hint, you already know I have very strong opinions about Kendall Jenner. Then we need to talk about the whole crazy, unexpected feud going on with Greta Thunberg and Andrew Tate. It makes no sense, but also makes the most sense. And this plot that happened between them is like a cartoon, comical, absurd story, and you need to hear it. Ends up with someone getting arrested. And lastly, we're going to talk about five of the most important lessons I learned throughout 2022, just to close out the show. Wanted to put something inspiring in there. But before we get into all of it, make sure you rate this podcast 5-star on Spotify, Apple Podcast. Leave a cute little review. You're already here, you may as well do so. Screenshot yourself listening to it, post it to your Instagram story, and tag me, and I'll hit you up in your DMs and literally harass all your family and friends to listen to this podcast. Literally bully them until they do. I support you. And without further ado, let's get into it. Class is in session. Take your seats. Welcome to Pop Culture University.
And you never say hey or remember my name, and it's probably because you think you're cooler than me.
No one loves a good nepotism baby more than Hollywood does. Some of the most elite jobs you can ever get are usually just handed to people who have parents or family members, friends in the industry, and they almost gatekeep the power and the glory of fame that so many people are dying to get into. And it's kind of seemed as this evil cult people are starting to realize about Hollywood. And nepotism babies have struck up such a massive conversation online. It's reached like a critical mass where we can no longer not talk about the subject of nepotism babies just because of the way it's taking over 2022. In 2022, it kind of seems like everyone who was up and coming was a product of nepotism. Everyone is someone's kid. Everyone is someone's grandkid, from Euphoria to Stranger Things to Bridgerton. All of the favorite shows and movies of this year, you didn't even realize that nepotism babies ran that shit. And now the veil is being lifted. And people get very mad when they find that out. They think, oh, I thought I just loved this person because of their talent and their grit. And, you know, they work so hard to be in this. And it kind of makes those individual actors or whoever seem less inspiring and less relatable, and almost like you want to root for them a bit less. But that doesn't just go for actors. It goes for influencers and singers. This year, it seems like everyone is a nepotism baby. So Vulture, the news outlet, came out with an article that was like brutal. Brutal. I don't know if you've seen it yet, but it was brutal in exposing all the nepotism babies in Hollywood and getting down to the bottom of why it pisses people off so much. There was like a image that was at the top of this article, and they literally demoralized all these nepotism babies on the cover because they put all their faces on babies in like a hospital crib. They didn't just call them out by name. They put their faces on the cover of this article. Understandably, it pissed a lot of these nepotism babies off, and they decided to speak up about it. So even now, the actors and actresses, the famous people who can just enjoy their inherited clout, and isn't that a nice concept? Inherited clout. If only I had inherited clout. Oh my God, that's like the Gen Z term for like nepotism baby, inherited clout. In this Vulture article, they compared the label of, quote, a nepotism baby to having psoriasis, something so awful that will never go away even if you try to shed the image, and will permanently taint your reputation in Hollywood in 2022. People used to get away with it, but you know how Gen Z is. You know the investigators, you know the social warriors that Gen Z is, which I love. They're calling these people out and exposing the system that is not a meritocracy that we hoped would be. Even in this article, they are putting out PSAs urging celebrity parents to roast their babies to keep them humble. I think every baby needs to stay humble, honestly. But before I name some examples, if it was not clear, a nepotism baby is someone who majorly benefits from having, well, in the terms of Hollywood, from having a family member very closely tied to the industry, whether it be an actor or actress themselves. Maybe it can be a screenwriter, maybe it can be a director, a model, a singer, you name it. They not only get clout, but they get an in into the industry, which is like 90% of making it in Hollywood, just that first massive break. And then you can just like take all of the residual checks from your one big break and promote diet pills or laxative or something on TV for the rest of your life, and you're set for life. And a lot of people go down that route, but that's what I'm saying. The biggest part of getting a job in Hollywood is just breaking into the business, and these babies get to do that because they have a major in. They get not only clout, but they get experience, they get higher pay once they're in it because of the attention that they'll bring to whatever project they're working on. It's a really amazing list of perks that, you know, we all wish we had. So here's some examples that might shock you, and it might make you rethink your fave. And I'm sorry if this is like me revealing to you that Santa isn't real, but here we go. So here's a list: Miley Cyrus, Noah Cyrus, Kendall Jenner, Kylie Jenner, Hailey Bieber, Jaden Smith, Willow Smith, Drew Barrymore, Jamie Lee Curtis, Liza Minnelli, Timothy Chalamet, Zoe Deutsch, Lily Collins, Emma Roberts, Tracy Ellis Ross, Zoe Kravitz, Lily Rose Depp, Brooklyn Beckham, Olivia Jade, Nicolas Cage, Dakota Johnson, Kate Hudson, Kaya Gerber, Billie Lourd, Blue Ivy, Malia and Sasha Obama, Cassie David, Maude Apatow. But there's obviously the biggest nepotism baby of all time. Jesus. Duh. I wish my name was on that list, though, and we all do. It kind of makes you think, like, wow, like, are we just going to, like, mindlessly bow down to them and let them keep getting away with this generational successful careers, like art, like how people in England just like mindlessly bow down to like Prince William? Like, do they really care? Should we really even care about them if they don't even have any talent? Here's some examples of nepotism in action. Kendall Jenner, a lot of people say, can't really even walk in these shows, and she's walking like she is Bambi fresh out the womb, but yet she's the highest paid supermodel in the world because her family got her connections. There's literally scenes in Keeping Up with the Kardashians where Kim is like begging Kendall to take the opportunities that Kim is trying to give her, and Kendall's like isn't taking it seriously at first, and Kim like yells at her that she should be so grateful and she's trying to give her a career, and it's so true. Another example is Lori Loughlin buying Olivia Jade into college and then going to jail for being exposed. Blue Ivy having a Grammy at 9 years old just because her mom is Beyonce. Jamie Lee Curtis getting the role in Halloween that has like made her career just because her mother was the woman in Psycho who's in the famous shower stabbing scene. She even said that she's, quote, pretty sure that it tipped the director's choice her way to choose her for the movie. Another example is Lily Rose Depp landed her first campaign with Chanel, the same house that her mother, Vanessa, worked for, and the same year she made her film debut alongside her father, Johnny Depp. And when asked about this, if she thinks it's because of nepotism, she just said, quote, it just doesn't make any sense that the path would be already cleared for me. Girl, it doesn't make any sense when people say the path was cleared for you. That is why people do not like nepotism babies. There's no shame in just admitting it, but we'll get into that later. Another great example is when Reese Witherspoon told her industry friend Mindy Kaling that her son Deacon was interested in acting. Mindy Kaling immediately casted him as a prep school cutie in 2 episodes of Never Have I Ever, in which he did a decent job according to fans, and you know, his career was rolling on ever since then. Another example is when Kamala Harris's stepdaughter Ella showed up to the inauguration dressed in a very unique and fashion-forward outfit. She landed a modeling deal, which led to her walking in New York Fashion Week and being named an icon by Harper's Bazaar. More example is Malia Obama getting to write scripts for a new Amazon series without any prior experience or education in that specific field. I actually used to know someone who was like friends with Sasha Obama, and they would like have sleepovers together and do like girly things together, and apparently the life of Malia and Sasha Obama is very stressful. They, even though they're not the president anymore, Obama's not the president anymore, they still have to walk around with like security guards, and anytime they would, for example, like order pizza, the security guard would have to taste test it first to see if he died and if it was poisoned. Like, insane, but also mad luxurious. And that's the first thing I would do if I was rich. Hire someone to first be my assistant and then to eat everything that I was about to eat to see if they died first. Also, I want someone to open my Amazon packages for me because I'm like so scared of a package bomb. So I would need an assistant to do that and take the bullet for me there. But being a nepotism baby is not all sunshine, praised mediocrity, gatekeeping, lack of self-awareness, higher pay simply for your last name, and rainbows. The conversation has reached such a critical mass that being a nepotism baby these days is kind of like the conversation about being pretty. You know how when people are pretty, they have to like phrase it as a bad thing because, oh, I've had to work so much harder just because I'm so pretty and prove to people that I'm not just a pretty face. It's so hard when people just always tell me I'm pretty, like, take me seriously, I have a personality too. It's just so hard when everyone wants me. It's almost something that people have to apologize for and then make others feel bad for trying to make them feel bad for. It's become something that is starting to be socially bad, and people have to confront it. They're no longer just allowed to reap the benefits and have everyone think that they just got there because they're that great. They're now kind of getting bullied. In this Vulture article, I mean, whoever wrote this was ruthless, darling. Ruthless. They said in the article, quote, this is the nepotism baby credo. Try it, and if at first you fail and you don't succeed, remember that you're still a celebrity's child. So try again. Basically saying, you entitled fuck. So here's what a lot of celebrities who have, you know, been accused. I mean, I guess you can't really be accused of nepotism, baby. It's just fact. So here are some celebrities who have been given that title, what they've said about it. Maude Apatow, star of Euphoria, said that the term makes her, quote, sad. Gwyneth Paltrow says that she doesn't like it because people are just ready to pull you down and say, you don't belong there. Zoe Kravitz said it left her feeling deeply insecure. Jamie Lee Curtis said, the current conversation about nepotism babies is just designed to try to diminish and denigrate and hurt. Well, yeah, it's not meant to praise nepo babies, girl. I'm not saying it's meant to hurt, but I feel like the truth hurts, you know what I'm saying? And when nepo babies have to look in the mirror and say, oh, I'm really not that girl, huh? Maybe that's why. It hurts a little bit. Do you know what really hurts, though? When someone who is a nepotism baby fails in the public, then people are going to bully them really hard because it's like you had one leg up, you were 10 steps higher on the ladder, and you still are kind of failing. That would not be good. That would be embarrassing. Some example of people that has happened to is Jane Fonda's son, Peter Fonda. I love Jane Fonda so much. I think Jane Fonda is such a legend, and her current like health issues are making me so sad. I want her to live forever. But anyway, Peter Fonda was a big executive in Hollywood, once said this about him, that he doesn't have a core of tension. Something in him is still asleep and perhaps always will be. Basically saying he just doesn't got it and he doesn't care enough and he's not trying hard enough. And even with all of his clout and his mom being Barbarella, he still is not going to get them roles and be a superstar. Sucks to suck. I'm pretty sure this excerpt from the Vulture article is about Dakota Johnson. If I just had to guess, I want you guys to prepare to guess who this is about. Any nepotism maybe you can think about that you think maybe isn't very good. Okay, this is what it says. The casting director put it bluntly. A lot of children of famous people are not good. How often are they meeting with them? God, there have been so many over the course of my life. They once met with an inspiring actress who was the daughter of two movie stars. There was something else that walked in the room with her. Like, my parents are famous and I'm here because somebody told me to meet you. A lovely person, but definitely a sense of entitlement. She left and I was like, that person doesn't excite me. The struggle isn't there. However, that wasn't a deal breaker though, because afterward, that daughter booked the role in a movie that made her a household name. I feel like that could potentially be referring to 50 Shades of Grey with Dakota Johnson, who is a legend. And we'll get into why I really like Dakota Johnson, because yes, I'm being hard on them right now, but the tone will definitely change in a second and we'll see both sides of this. But Dakota Johnson, a legend. And maybe, you know, Patty, that's not the truth. Maybe Dakota Johnson isn't the one they're referring to. We'll see. Also in the article, it was calling out Brooklyn Beckham. David Beckham's son. David Beckham is so sexy. There's someone who spent like $50,000 trying to look like David Beckham. And how does he kick a soccer ball like that? Oh my God, the way it like bends in the air. Like, I feel like he's an air bender. It's fucking crazy. Mad respect to David Beckham. But, and his feet. I wonder what those feet can do. The article said, no one exemplifies this maxim better than Brooklyn Beckham. In the words of The Guardian's Marina Hyde, a celebrity scion incapable of having what other mortals might regard as amateur hobbies without considering them nascent professional empires. At 23, Beckham has already cycled through aborted attempts to follow in his parents' footsteps in the worlds of football and modeling. Wow. So they called him unathletic, untalented, and ugly. He next tried to become a professional photographer, releasing a coffee table book full of out-of-focus pictures of elephants. Oh my God, they're really coming for him. Then he was a chef, a career he embarked upon despite possessing a level of culinary talent most commonly seen in BuzzFeed videos. Oh my God. They are just like breaking his like spine one vertebrae at a time until he's fucking dead. Like, take your foot off his neck. Fuck, stop bullying him. I want to like hug him and be like, it's okay, you nepotism baby. I'll wrap you in your blanket and put you to bed. They continued, well, these endeavors have not been successful in the traditional sense. They have enabled him to amass 14.6 million followers on Instagram, where the only important metric is the one thing a nepotism baby is assured. Yeah, basically, they're just assured clout. I forgot what Brooklyn Beckham looked like. Let me go stalk him on Instagram really quick. Brooklyn Beckham. He does look pretty mediocre as well. Oh, you know when you can just tell like someone probably doesn't put in effort into a lot of things? Yeah, it's giving that vibe. What other Beckham is like super cute? Brooklyn was really cute when he was younger. Damn, whatever, Brooklyn, we still love you. Someone else in this article went on to roast nepotism baby models as a whole with what they say here. And I mean, if you think about it, being a nepotism baby and being even half decently pretty, and you can just get a little nip and a tuck, my name is Bella Hadid, you could probably walk in a fashion show. Don't we all wish? Don't we all wish? But that's kind of what a lot of supermodels are these days. That's why people are talking about it. But anyway, they said, it's no surprise so many nepotism babies get their start as models. The child doesn't have to open their mouth. I've learned that once they start speaking, the public doesn't really go along for the ride. Or what they say. The more they talk, the more unrelatable they become. Why do I feel like they're talking about Hailey Bieber in that? I feel like whatever insiders these are, they really just called out Hailey Bieber. Do you guys want to see a Hunger Games of the Nepotism Babies? Like we pull their names out of a fishbowl as dressed in some elaborate costumed outfit made with a very pale face of makeup. I would love to be Effie in the Hunger Games and like pull out someone's name that is basically like guaranteed a certain death, but say it with a smile on my face and, you know, enthusiasm in my pronunciation. Primrose Everdeen. Hailey Bieber. Call them for the Hunger Games. I'd be so bad in the Hunger Games. Oh my God, so bad. I would literally stand on the... And I know I would get picked too. I would only have my name in the bowl once. I would still get picked the first time around. I only win like a lottery if it's a bad one. Right when the clock in the cornucopia finished counting down, I would scream at the top of my lungs and run off into the woods like PETA did, literally just like uncontrollably sobbing so loud that someone just kills me so fast. Actually, I would just jump off of it before, because don't you like blow up if you jump off too soon? Sounds like the easiest out to me. Anyway, enough talking about nepotism babies being in the Hunger Games. I think there is a place for nepotism babies, and I'm going to say why nepotism is not the worst thing and why this conversation doesn't need to be so mean on the internet these days. So first of all, I want to say that nepotism is everywhere. Nepotism is in our lives as well. It's in every single industry, whether it's the medical field or the lawyer field when you need to get nice internships or the marketing field, really anywhere. We all benefit or have some kind of built-in connection just from the family and the network that we are born into. The most common phrase that we hear when it comes to the subject of getting a job is, quote, "It's not what you know, it's who you know." And did you know that 85% of jobs are through networking and prior connections? So yes, maybe we don't get to go to the Met Gala wearing a $30,000 dress and a $100,000 necklace while holding hands with our most famous pop star husband in the world like Hailey Bieber from the connections that we were born with, but we all have them. And would you expect someone in Hollywood not to take them? Unfortunately, we really can't stop that anywhere in the world unless there was some crazy laws or revolution that took place. So I feel like we cannot stop them. It's just how the world works. And I respect everyone who takes an opportunity. I really do. Because while I think these Nepo babies do get their foot in the door, which is the biggest thing and gets their careers off to this like rocket launcher start, it's what they do with that foot in the door afterwards that is going to determine really how they're seen by the whole world. And if there will be a good nepotism baby, like I feel like a good example is Tracy Ellis Ross, who we all love, or a bad one that someone may get made fun of. So there's a way to be a good nepotism baby and a way to be a bad one. A nepo baby can stay in the sphere of the entertainment world if they use the opportunity to get their foot in the door and then work extremely hard and carve out their own path and aren't so insular and entitled and self-important to the point where they don't feel the need to work hard or be interesting, because then they won't last and they'll come to an intersection where their privilege is not meeting their talent or their hard work. So they will have nowhere to go, no road to go down, and their career will be over. But if someone takes their good opportunity and meets it with talent and hard work, they will be able to successfully use the opportunity that they were born into. An example of two people who, yes, had a lot of privilege in the system, but failed to rise to the occasion, even with their massive head start. Well, one is Brooklyn Beckham, who was roasted to shit in this article. And then the second one, as we know, is the woman who was in Funny Girl, the play on Broadway before illiterate Lea Michele was Funny Girl. And that is Beanie Feldstein. She was a nepotism baby as well. And you've seen her in multiple different comedies on the big screen, but she also was able to get connected for free with her nepotism baby connections at educationconnection.com to get the role on Broadway, but was so bad because she just simply didn't have the chops, and she would have never gotten that role with her lack of vocal range or lack of stamina on stage or just performing talent. She would have never, ever, 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 ever gotten that role if it wasn't for her family. So she was literally fired and got the show to be disgraced, and the critical acclaim was in the garbage. She almost took that show off of Broadway because she did so bad. And that's why, out of all her replacements, the known resident controversial problematic person celebrity Lea Michele had to take over. Like, they were like, fine, we'll bite the bullet. She's so talented, even though she's apparently, allegedly, a racist. We'll put her in the show because Beanie was that bad. Which is, yeah. That is seen as a bad nepotism baby. Someone who's so unaware that they feel like they don't have to be hardworking, that they don't have to, you know, not take roles that they don't deserve. There's no room for nepotism babies like that. So here are some that, here are some nepotism babies that I do not like. These are at the bottom of the ranking. I think they would not be where they are without their connection. Lowest tier, Hailey Bieber. I'm so sorry, but I've never, like, remembered anything she said because I just don't think it's ever been interesting. I think, yeah, she's pretty, but that's it. She's not drop dead. You know, she looks tight. Someone else is Kylie Jenner. Unfortunately, she would not be a self-made billionaire. I don't think she would have had the ease of sculpting her body, you know, shake what her doctor gave her, if it was not for her family, which I think then in turn got her her career. So I like Kylie. I have nothing against her, but I don't think she'd be where she was without them. Maude Apatow, I think she was okay in Euphoria. I think she was slightly convincing, but after finding out that she had a lot of ins in the industry, it made sense to me because I don't think her performance was overwhelming. Then obviously Olivia Jade, whose mother tried to buy her into a prestigious university and then spent the next Christmas in jail. I don't think Olivia Jade would have had the draw or the ploy to, one, become a social media influencer, two, get into that college, and three, be on Dancing with the Stars. Like, come on! Another way to be a horrible nepotism baby is to just completely deny it. Completely pretend like you are really just that girl. Like, you're so self-important that you just know you're that good, and that's why you got it. And, oh my God, having a famous family actually made it 10 times harder for you. Girl, you're not fooling anyone. Literally no one. And if that's what you have to tell yourself before you go to bed at night so you can sleep well, go ahead. But one day you will look in the mirror and it will be, you know, obvious that that is just not the case. Obviously, I want to quote Kendall Jenner here, who was at the Kardashians, keeping up with the Kardashians' final reunion. And Andy Cohen asked her, you know, what does she think about the fact that she's the highest paid model in the world? And everyone just says that's because of her family. And Kendall said that she had to work twice as hard to become the highest paid model in the world and would not even put her last name on call sheets because she didn't want anyone to know what family she was a part of or have that sway any casting director's decision to choose her. And her strut was just so good, that foot in front of foot, hip swing. She was killing those runways so hard that she just became the highest paid supermodel in the world, Kendall. Like, I don't really have anything against you at this current moment, I guess. But, like, that is just so not true. That's a lovely thought. But clearly everyone knew what family you were from because there was a television crew at every casting that you were at, girl. Like, we all know Kris Jenner literally threatened every casting director behind the scenes and was like, do you know who I am? We know that happened every single time Kendall was at a casting thing. So, someone else is Dan Levy. I know from Schitt's Creek, we love Dan Levy, but unfortunately, he said some pretty goofy things about nepotism. He literally co-starred with his dad in that television show because he has a famous dad. And then he said, I've never turned to my dad for anything. I think out of the fear of being labeled a nepotism baby. Well, girl, saying that as you're on a show with him puts that label on you. Like, did you think that was going to free you of that label? No. It did the exact opposite. And I remember seeing people online saying, like, oh, wow, that kind of turns me ugly. Like, they want to love him, but that just made him look a little goofy in that moment. Still love Schitt's Creek, though. Still a legend. Someone else is Lena Dunham. She was accused of only casting nepotism babies in her show Girls and then being one herself. And she said, quote, the nepotism thing is ridiculous. No one ever got a television show because their mother was an artist in the 80s or 90s. And I feel like if there's any in the industry, girl, it probably helped. These people should just acknowledge their privilege. I can acknowledge mine. I'm white. I'm middle class. I'm super fucking hot. So obviously I have pretty privilege. Duh. I'm able-bodied. I'm neurotypical. Allegedly, I'm cisgendered. the fact that I probably got a nice plea deal when I went to court was probably based on the fact that I'm white. It's just like, I'm not saying that was 100% it, but I think it's silly to be naive or try to cast any doubt on those things. You know what I'm saying? So here are some nepotism babies who I really like, though. I feel like I can like a nepotism baby, like I said before, if they just acknowledge it. They are unique in their own way. They're not trying to just like be their parents. And they, or in like the rare case, they actually pass their family member in fame because maybe they actually have more talent or more of a superstar. And it's like, oh, like the student has become the master. It's a big turning of tables. So these are people who I think could have been famous even if they have no connection at all and are legendary. First of all, Miley Cyrus. I mean, come on. Miley's attitude, her charisma, uniqueness, nerve, and talent, her cunt, her vocals themselves. She was like JoJo Siwa wishes. Miley Cyrus is everything JoJo Siwa wishes she could be. A child star who has the vocals of like a legend. And that is absolutely true. She, from the moment she was a teeny bopper on the Hannah Montana stage, a superstar. And now she's an international, worldwide mega star. And yes, Billy Ray Cyrus had the whole Icky Breaky Heart thing, and he had a nice little comeback with Old Town Road. Him and his mullet and his creepy mustache and his girlfriend who's younger than Miley Cyrus. We respect him, but Miley is the bigger star. Come on. Come on. Someone else. Emma Roberts. Are you kidding? Chanel Oberlin? Emma motherfucking Roberts, the it girl of forever. She has given us so many iconic on-screen moments, and you know she takes her craft extremely seriously. The practices she would said she would do to get into character, and just the way she delivers as Madison Montgomery or, as I said, Chanel Oberlin, she is such an it girl through and through. I think she could have been famous even without her family. Dakota Johnson, ever since she said, actually, Ellen, that's not the truth. She stays calling out late night hosts or just talk show hosts in general. And because of that, she has carved her own path for herself, and she is a legend icon living, and I will stan her forever. Tracee Ellis Ross, she's fucking hilarious. She's not in the same career as her mother at all, Diana Ross, but she's so funny and so aware of her situation. I love her. Drew Barrymore, she's a star. We can't deny that. She's interesting as fuck. Her show, like, Drew Barrymore is like the most endearing, funny mom to me. And I feel like when she was young and in all those rom-coms, she was like the endearing, like a bit aloof, naive, just like best friend. Like, she was, the camera loves her. She's a superstar. And Liza Minnelli, even though her mom was Judy Garland, is that it? Yeah. Liza Minnelli, because it's Liza with a Z, not Lisa with an S, because Lisa with S goes not Z instead of S, Li instead of Lee. It's simple as can be. See, Liza. That is why she's a legend. So what can we learn from this? I feel like from this whole conversation, we can learn that, hey, yeah, nepotism babies, they're annoying. They're entitled. They are crybabies, and they deserve a timeout. But at the end of the day, we can't change them, and we can't change this system. So I feel like what I'm trying to say here is capitalize on whatever connections you have in life, because clearly it is one of the most important things in the world to get a job. If that encourages you to network more, to go out to parties more, to suddenly become closer with your aunts and uncles or grandparents or family friends or whatever, do so, because that will truly get you the in. That will set you up for life. There's no shame in it, babe. Any way to get that break, you got to do what you got to do. So for your life, keep a lookout on those connections, because as I said, 85% of jobs are gotten through prior connection. And 70% of jobs are never even posted publicly because they're just filled with someone that someone already knows before they even have to do so. So as we know, it's not what you know, it's who you know. So try to know everyone.
I don't mind being pummeled or trampled or trounced, but it does drive you bats to be mispronounced. It's Liza with Z, not Lisa with an S, because Lisa with an S goes snods. It's Z instead of S, Lie instead of Lee. It's simple as could be. See, Liza, then M-I-double-N, then E-double-L-I. You double up the N, that's not new. Then E-double-E-L, end it with an I. That's what you say. Minnelli, Liza Minnelli. It's easy, it's easy. See, it's Leezy. No, Liza!
So there has been a massive Twitter brawl, and it is, I think, the perfect way to cap off 2022. I feel like men are getting their comeuppance at the end of the year. Tory Lanez and now Andrew Tate. DaBaby was taken down in 2022. I just know men will be taken down more in 2023, but this was the most hilarious fight I've ever seen happen on Twitter in my whole fucking life. So Greta Thunberg, I'm assuming you know who she is. If you don't, she is like a teen climate change activist. She is a teenager, but she also looked like she's kind of like 85 at the same time, but in the most respectful way. Do you know what I'm saying? Like a cute 85-year-old, like an 85-year-old you want to play bridge with and invite to brunch. And unless you were living under a rock this year, which I feel like some of you were, because of some of the things you DM me, like when you first start to listen to the podcast, you're like, I never knew that Kim Kardashian used to be married to Kanye West. Girl. So let me just lift the rock up from out, you know, from above you. A huge conversation this year was climate change with celebrities and using their money to fly their private jets on a 3-minute flight to In-N-Out Burger down the street. Taylor Swift taking like 900 flights this year when she doesn't need to and loaning her jet out to everyone and having all these cars or just polluting the air more than they need to from their resources. It was a huge conversation. And Andrew Tate, who, if you don't know who he is, he's like a misogynist, MAGA, men's rights influencer. He is basically just like a menace on the internet. And if you don't know him, oh my God, girl, I'm so like jealous of you. He's awful. He is someone who does outrage marketing to try to get attention on social media. And I guess I do too. Like, I guess I do a little outrage marketing. It works. I did the other day make a video about which celebrities I think will die in 2023. It did get people's attention, but his outrage is like actually really awful and really offensive. And Elon Musk let him back on Twitter. God knows why, because Elon Musk is dumb, but he took this opportunity to try to get under Greta Thunberg's skin because Greta is very big on the internet. So Andrew Tate, who is this rich male podcast guy who tries to influence young men to be just like him and hate women and do whatever they can to be an alpha male and make money, he tweeted out, "Hello at Greta Thunberg. I have 33 cars. My Bugatti has a W16 8.0L quad turbo, whatever the fuck that means. My two Ferrari 812 Competizione have 6.5L versus 12S. Again, for all of you car nerdies out there, I do not know what that means. Basically, I think it just means they're like really bad for the environment. A lot of CO2 emissions going on. He said, "This is just the start. Please provide your email so I can send you a complete list of my car collection and the respective enormous emissions." First of all, what? Begruntled gremlin 12-year, like third grader boy possessed Andrew Tate to tweet that. Like, I know he was just like giggling the whole time he was tweeting that. It's like when someone just like picks on you for no reason and then like laughs about it and thinks they're slick, but they really just want your attention. He's so fucking embarrassing. But he knew he just wanted to get under Greta Thunberg's skin so she would respond to him and give him clout on social media because he's been kicked off of it for a long time, so he needs to get the ball rolling again. And it worked. Greta Thunberg responded to him and she said the best response of all time. To his tweet boasting about the amount of cars he has, she responded with, "Yes, please do enlighten me. Email me at smalldickenergy@getalife.com. I'm fucking obsessed with her. She called like the head of the misogyny snake out for having a small dick, which he probably fucking does. I've never seen a dick print on Andrew Tate. That response had me laughing harder than when Kamala Harris sees the bus. That response alone made me want to go plant a tree or something for the environment. Greta does not support CO2 emissions, but she lit his ass up, put oil on him, and lit that shit on fire." And that tweet now made Greta Thunberg the youngest person on Twitter to ever have a tweet hit 3 million likes. Wow. Something about the Andrew Tate stans, though, like, they're not to be fucked with. Yes, there's a lot of people who go against him, but anytime I've like made a video about him on the internet, they report it so many times it gets taken down because they like pledge allegiance to that man, which I don't know why. So Andrew Tate responded to her saying that he has a small dick. He said, in a tweet, "Thank you for confirming via your email address that you have a small penis at Greta Thunberg. The world was curious, and I do agree you should get a life." And then he put out a video that's 2 minutes long, basically giving the most immature, unfunny, unclever response to her.
"Release some greenhouse gases. I'm obviously a stranger to online controversy. It's not something I often do. But now, the mainstream press is commenting on the fact that I was informing Greta that my very extensive car collection with internal combustion engines, which run on dead dinosaurs, have an enormous emission profile. And she replied by telling me her own email address. Greta's email address is, 'I have small dick energy.' Why would that be your own email address, Greta? Strange. I mean, also, I don't want to assume her gender. It's 50-50, but it is what it is. I'm not actually mad at Greta. Please bring me pizza and make sure that these boxes are not recycled. Thank you. So I'm not actually mad at Greta, right? Because she doesn't realize she's been programmed. She doesn't realize she's a slave of the Matrix. She thinks she's doing good. Someone has sat her down and convinced her to try and convince you to beg your government to tax you into poverty to stop the sun from being hot. And then, because I called her out on it, the global matrix got this bot farm to like and retweet and all this bot commenting to try and pretend that her telling me that she has a small dick and her own email address somehow teaches me a lesson. Welcome to a new episode of The Clown Show. But now I know, at least, that Greta, with a little hate-filled face, bitter, sitting somewhere without the heating on, in the cold, a little hot, shivering, views my tweets, which is going to make my Twitter account far more fun into eternity."
That response was really unlike Andrew Tate because it was so just not on the nose. It wasn't biting. It wasn't sharp. It wasn't smart. It was really lacking in impressiveness, and just showed again how much he's getting roasted and ratioed by a 19-year-old girl on Twitter. Andrew Tate, you can hate him, but he's really smart. Like, I don't agree with anything he says, of course. Like, I'm not saying he's smart in that way. He's an awful person, but he's smart in the way where he can respond to people with the most sound logic his arguments can possibly have, if that makes sense. Like, there's no sound argument for saying climate change isn't real, but he makes it seem as though you have to, like, second guess yourself. He's very, very clever, and it's scary. But that was, like, a really, like, just immature response of him. Just, like, undeveloped, not good response. And the where he said, "If I'm assuming your gender, it's 50-50, I was like, bruh. Embarrassing isn't even the word to describe it. I would never get in a beef with a teenager, though. Like, even if a teenager came up to me and called me, like, a fag, I'd be like, "Oh, okay, bye." Like, I'm not getting in a fight with a teenager. I'm just not doing it. Anyway, did you hear the part in the video where he said, "Please bring me pizza"? That's where things get crazy. Because on that pizza box, the pizza box that was brought to him doxed him. It let government officials who were watching his video on Twitter know where he lived, which is important because the pizza boxes shown in the video are from a Romanian restaurant chain called Jerry's Pizza. And cops from Romania have been looking for him, and they finally knew he was in the country from the pizza boxes in the video, and they went to his house and arrested him. Oh! Oh! Can you believe it? Imagine going to jail because you made a video bullying a teenage girl about having a small penis, and then you get arrested. That's like a downfall that not even Steven Spielberg could have written any better. So he was like arrested after that because him and his brother, Andrew Tate and Tristan Tate, were detained on suspicion of human trafficking, RAPE, and forming an organized crime group who allegedly kept at least six women captive in houses surrounding the area where they were sexually assaulted and forced to produce pornographic content for social media under the threats of violence. So now they're investigating them and they're holding them in custody to question them and search their house and everything. Greta did more for climate change by getting him locked up than Disney's Send It On song ever did. He thought he got her good to saying that she has a small dick, but he was playing checkers while Greta was playing chess. She said, checkmate, bitch, hoping that he would dox himself. You playing checkers couldn't beat me playing chess. Now I'm about to turn around and beat my chess. Bitch, it's King Kong. Bitch, it's King Kong. This is King Kong? Yes, Miss King Kong. Chinese ink on, Siamese links on. Call me 2 Chainz, name go ding dong. Greta really said, fuck around and find out, Andrew. Yeah, Andrew Tate may own 33 gas-guzzling cars, but Greta Thunberg now owns Andrew Tate. And you know what? I think him and his brother are probably guilty because, unfortunately, I had to do research on Andrew Tate before for a video that I was going to make about him called 5 Reasons Why Everyone Hates Andrew Tate that was swiftly reported so many times by the incel cult Andrew host that it was taken down. But he, in the past, was suspected of the same thing. And for some reason, he was let off or whatever. But people think he, like, threatened the girls who were involved to not say anything, allegedly. And he factually used to make money off of making women who worked for him do, like, video chat calls with older men that were, of course, sexy in nature. And they would make money on these video chat calls from the men paying to talk to them. But Andrew would take all the money and not give them anything. And he said it's just an honor that they got to work for them. So his business, like, apparently didn't continue. But people just think he kept it going and is just holding these women against their will or something. But I feel like the truth will come out. In my heart, I feel like his whole, you know, men's rights internet persona is just bullshit. And he didn't become rich by being the best in business or being a genius or being an alpha male or whatever. He became rich from being a criminal and an awful person. So what can we learn from this whole situation? I would say a lesson here is to be careful who you idolize and who you look up to, because Andrew Tate's whole thing is trying to get people to follow him and be just like him and learn from him. But I feel like we should not be blindly following anyone unless they give us some credentials. You know, we can't be seeing people's potential without their credentials. Even if that comes down to like a family member or a parent or an older brother or something, I just wouldn't blindly follow their lead just because they tell you to. I feel like you should base who you inspire to be like based on your own values and your own hopes and dreams in life, and then search for people who match those and have developed those skills and lifestyle and just all around live in inspiring existence that you know you can be one day but just are not quite there yet. So I would say understand who you want to be in the future, what's important to you, and what you want to resemble and who you want to resemble, and then base who you know look to for that sort of inspiration, advice, and as a leader. And choose it from there. Don't just choose it because someone has this outward vibrato and, you know, tells you that they're the best in the world, but actually have a lot of secrets and may not be who you think they are at all under the covers. So don't worship a false god in that way. So remember on Tuesday when we talked about how Nick Cannon had to visit 11 kids on Christmas this year and how he was booked and busy? Well, now he just welcomed his 12th baby with Alyssa Scott, who he already has another baby with. But now he has 12. This man is can't even say he's like a part-time dad anymore. He is a full-time. He is a double. He needs to be getting paid overtime, if not. He is so fucking booked and busy. There's not going to be enough of him to go around. There's clearly enough of him to go around with the women, but not with his fucking kids. I just don't think it's so, like, just irresponsible of him to do that. Like, there's no way he's going to be able to spend enough time with all of them. He can, like, put them all on a group FaceTime or something, and that could be his bonding time, but there's no way. Even not even in a day, but, like, in a week, in a month. He's just not going to be able to do that. I still think scientists should use his body for science, dissect his balls, and see how the fuck he is so fertile, and maybe that can go towards ending infertility in men. But congratulations, question mark, to Nick Cannon for, you know, your 12th baby. It's like this man hasn't learned his mistake after the 12th time. All he had to do, really all that man had to do, was have two kids with Mariah Carey and stop. Ugh. That's all he had to do. And then he could have been set for life. Mariah makes way more than him. She could have been paying him child support or something. I'm just saying, he could have had Mariah money and lived happily ever after with his kids rock and roll. But no. So before we end the episode, because it is Pop Culture University, where we try to learn some life lessons as we, you know, dig into the dirty, exciting, hot goss, I thought I would share with you guys, I think, the five biggest life lessons I've learned this year, whether it be through the podcast that we talked about or through real life. And yes, I may look the same as I did at the beginning of this year. I may seem the same in a lot of ways, but I feel like I'm definitely a changed person mentally than I was at the beginning of the year. So insanely different. Even how I approach the podcast is so different, how confident I feel doing it and the whole process. And being a content creator has really pushed me to, I think, just shed old, unfavorable habits of mine or thought processes, because it really pushes you out of your box and just all the crazy opportunities I got to experience this year, and growth and traveling and graduating school and going to award shows and networking and just learning all these things. It really makes you forced to grow. So I'm kind of happy for the ups and downs that this year has brought me. But I feel like I've learned a lot, and I think I'm genuinely like a better person than I was at the start of the year. So the first thing I learned this year that has helped me so much in just my everyday life is to take things less personally. I really don't take much personally these days, because I feel like I used to really beat myself up over any relationship of mine, whether it be romantic or friendship or family. I would always be so scared that I would do something wrong, or the person would get mad at me, or I wasn't enough, or I wasn't interesting enough, or maybe if someone doesn't talk to me anymore, it's all because of me and I just don't meet some criteria and I never will. But now I just understand that people's reactions to me have 99.9% to do with them and not to do with me. Especially just in a romantic circumstance, I feel like I've let myself kind of let that go, and it puts so much less pressure on me. People want something so specific. People have a type, not only when it comes to looks, but when it comes to personality and just so many small details about you that you can never even know what someone is thinking when they don't reciprocate in a relationship with you. So it's like almost absurd to me now to take things personal. And relationships that I used to kick myself for and blame myself for them ending, I'm like, wait. Nowadays, I look back and I laugh. I'm like, oh my God, that wasn't my fault. Like, I didn't do anything wrong. So I just take things less personally all the time. Or when it comes to even like friends, like, or family, like when someone is like projecting something at me, I used to take it so personally. I'm like, oh my God, like, why are they being mean? Like, I didn't do anything to them. Or even like a stranger at a bar. Like, now I just understand they're projecting and it doesn't have to do with me. And it really eases up a lot of tenseness in my life. So I would challenge you guys to take a lot of things less personally this year, because trust me, it's not you, it's them. The second thing is, I just say to myself every day now and kind of live by this rule that people will appreciate me for me or not at all. You can't put a mask on who you are. You can't act like a different person all the time. And I feel like I really started doing that last year, kind of. And it would almost be exhausting at a point, like when I was texting someone or meeting new people, I would, I guess, like not totally change my personality, but just like frame myself a little to how I think they wanted me to act or what they thought was cool or what someone like wanted me to say next in the text conversation. I would try to please people with my personality and make things easy for them, or try to make myself more likable and less myself to, I guess, trick people into liking me more, even though I was still me, just definitely a censored version of myself. But now I am so myself all the fucking time because I realize, one, being myself is the most valuable thing because no one else can be me. And you're when you're your true, authentic, full self and you express that to people outwardly, they are now given something with you that is totally irreplaceable and in like non-interchangeable with anyone else. So they are going to have this major like respect and almost like fascination with you just because you're you and they have never met anyone else like you. So pretending to be someone else will not work for you at all. And I feel like I just learned that this year because I used to think if I would be myself, I would ruin a situation and then it would sting even more because, oh my God, I was being myself and they didn't like me. Wow. But I guess if I thought I was being someone else, then if I got rejected, it wouldn't hurt as much. And that has to go with the podcast as well. I think I used to be less of myself and less tame and more agreeable and stuff when I would talk in here. But now I'm like, wait, I'm just going to be me and say what I want in this microphone for an hour. And if people keep listening, that's great. And if, you know, if they stop listening, that's going to hurt a lot more because like now I'm being myself. But, you know, the podcast has just kept growing and growing more throughout this whole year. So I'm myself always. Even when I just meet someone, I'll be a bit more like polite and less crazy, but I'm really myself from the get. And I think that is good. That also goes into like how I look too. Like I don't worry as much about how I look. I don't try to like take catfish photos or look so sexy and amazing and cute in every single photo I take or wear the nicest outfit all the time or be super like tight and toned all the time. Like I'm gonna let my personality shine more than anything else. And the less I care about how I look, like the more my personality shines. So I think that's like an interesting thing that I realized this year that I take with me all the time. The third thing is people aren't thinking about me as much as I think. And not in like a narcissistic way, like no narcissistic vibes here. I'm just saying in the past, I think I used to think people would pinpoint the negative about me just because in my head I would think, oh my God, the negative is so obvious. Like they must be seeing it. They must be seeing that my hair looks bad today or that I'm walking awkward or that I'm doing this or that wrong. I used to think people would care about those things. And when I would walk into a class, I would be so nervous about like how I put my bag down or was walking in the gym and feel so awkward just walking in front of all these people. But now I know like I could be in the gym and pee on the floor in front of everyone and slam a weight down and grunt and scream and drop the bench press right on my face and break my skull and people would like barely even care. Like no one's really paying attention that much. I could take an ass pick right in the big mirror at the gym in front of everyone, pull like fully moon everyone and no one would give a shit. And that's just like what I've experienced now. And that eases up my anxiety so much in public in literally every situation. So definitely I would say people are not thinking about you as much as you think they are. And that will give you a lot more freedom as you're going about your day. And I know it's hard to nail that thought into your head, but I promise you it's true. Because think about how you think about other people when they're walking by. You might think of them for a second or think about what they're wearing or what they're doing for a millisecond, but you completely forget into oblivion right after. So I would say, yeah. Number four is, I know this sounds so cheesy, but number four is that like laughter is truly the best thing in the world. Like at the beginning of the year, my hair was falling out because I was like stressed out so much and I would just emphasize, I think, in social interactions, being so perfect and wanting to be so, wanting everything to go so good in life that I would just be like so stressed about it. And I would never just be able to ease myself in situations. I would always just kind of be uptight and not thinking about the simple things, just like wanting to laugh with my friends or give people a laugh when I just meet them or I'm out in class or talking to whoever. And now I realize like the best social lubricant, the best medicine, the thing to give people the best time when they're with you is to just make them laugh. And that's made my social interactions like so much better towards the end of the year. Like when I'm out with anyone or talking with my mom, like I just want to laugh. Like I just want to crack a joke and people will not only like you more, but they'll remember how you made them feel when they were with you. And like they'll associate you with just like laughter and like good times and everything like that. So I would say like, don't stress so much about all the little details in social interactions, or if you're saying the right thing, or if things are going good. Just focus on having a good time and laughing. That's all you need to think about when you're with someone. Just keep the conversation nice and fun and crack a joke or two, because laughter this year has been like the best thing for me, and I try to do it every day. A day where I don't laugh is like a day wasted. So number five, and I think the most important, is trusting myself. The biggest thing. I used to always think that I was making the wrong decision about everything, and I was second guess everything I would think and think, oh, I'm not smart enough to make the right choice. I'm not wise enough. I'm probably ruining something right now by making this choice. But, and I feel like being a young person in general, like even if you right now are like in your 20s or late teens, you're coming up on that age, or you have experienced this all before and you're in your 30s or 40s, you still have a lot of decisions to make then. Like, we all have a lot of decisions to make, but especially as a young person in that kind of like instrumental phase in your life. And all those decisions in those young years, in the past few years of my life, has like driven me crazy about making the right decision all the time. So now I guess I just trust myself with every decision I'm thinking. And I think, like, I will legit say to myself as an affirmation every day, or just like randomly in my head, I'm like, I trust myself. I know it's best for myself. I make the right decision all the time. I don't even tell myself I think I'll make the right decision. I say to myself in my head, I know I make the right decision every single time. I make the right decision every single time. So in doing so, has made my life so much better, because I think truly the person who knows what's best for you is you, because you're the only person who knows all the complexities and the mind maze that is your brain, and what's going to make you happy and what you're capable of and what you see for yourself. And I wouldn't worry about making the wrong decision that's going to destroy everything, because we make so many decisions every day. I would say factually you're going to make 90% the right decisions, and maybe 10% of the time they might be a bit off, but the other 90% of the time you're making the absolutely right 100% choice that is going to offset any slight wrong turn. So I feel like it's just always going to work out, and you always make the right decision for you. So maybe start saying to yourself, I make the right decision every single time, and it will ease up your anxiety so much. All right, well, thank you guys for joining me at Pop Culture University today. I hope you had a fun time spilling the tea and discussing some so unbelievably wise and spiritual life lessons with me. I'm a guru, if you know what I'm saying. So yeah, just thank you for joining again. I can't believe this is the last podcast episode of 2022. I think I didn't miss I was late the other day, but I don't think I actually missed one upload this year. That's crazy. So I made 52 episodes this year. Wow. No, 104, because I post twice a week. Wow, I can't believe I made 104 podcast episodes this year. Damn. Well, it's been a very fun year, a very exciting year. I've literally grown so comfortable like doing this. I crave doing it when I'm not. And it was so intimidating to me at first when I started in 2021. So I encourage you guys to try something super, super intimidating that you wish you were good at. That might take a long time, because that time is going to pass anyway, and one day you're going to be so confident and comfortable doing it. So, oh my God, Patty, stop preaching. Shut up. The episode's over. You don't have to fucking give advice all the time. It's not warranted. I'm sorry. Anyway, I hope you guys have an amazing New Year's, and I'm so blessed to be able to spend the year with you guys. Please DM me anything. I try to get back to literally every single DM. It takes a lot of time, though, to be honest. I'm always doing shit. There's a lot of them in there. I still want to do the what do you want to share with the class segment. I've got a few people to DM me their drama, and the drama's already looking good. Y'all have some pretty interesting lives. So I'm excited for the what would you like to share with the class segment. DM me some crazy tea that you want to share with everyone that we can discuss on here. Kind of like an Ask Patty segment. But yeah, until Tuesday, be safe this weekend. Seriously, be safe with everything going on and crazy Ubers and drunk driving. Just be safe so you can have a super fun and life-changing, amazing 2023 that I know you all are capable of. Okay, so I will see you Tuesday. Love you, bye.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.